This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle, and we always look forward to this conversation, as everybody out there does. Everybody loves this
guy. The greatest Seahawk coach.
How his number is not retired.
Number 21.
How they haven't done a 30 for 30 on the man.
Number
I don't
one
know.
In your hearts.
A biopic should have been done. There should be all kinds of things in the works with this guy. It's centering around his life. But he's you know, lowered himself to join us once a week just to appease the people out
Here's
there.
Here's what I found out. Moyer and I have been spending lots of time together. That we're doing him a favor.
Are
because
we?
Heather is tired of listening to him talk about sports. And I actually was getting tired of listening to him. No, kidding.
We were watching, an outlet.
We were watching golf together. Paul, we were watching women's golf tournaments and things like that. I mean, amazing.
The great Paul Moyer is with us.
Paul Moyer, the great sportsman that he is.
Yes, on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hi, Paul.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you. And Bob, I'm just going to ask you a question. Have you ever seen the movie Benjamin Button?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great movie.
Good movie, right?
Uh-huh.
I think that's you, because, by the way, happy birthday today.
Thank you, Paul.
I know it's big. But my gut feeling is you're 70 but look 30.
Yeah, 73.
So you're going the other way. You're getting younger every year. You look good. But I wanted to wish you a happy birthday there. So
I appreciate that, man. And my head is definitely going the wrong direction because it's the size of an infant. So,
well, you guys,
it was before I came on the show, I was going, God, I'm exhausted today. I mean, just exhausted. And part of it's getting older. The other is, God, you know, there's just so much going on. I think the Mariners have exhausted me in a good way, you know, but it's so emotional. Every game, every pitch, nothing's easy for them, as you guys know.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just, my goodness, I'm exhausted. I think the Pac-12, UW, you know, it's just stress. Stress makes you tired. I mean, there's, you know, obviously the whole COVID thing, and I don't know, just exhausted today. And I still have to do the show tonight, you know, with Bumpus. By the way, Dave, you're going to be really happy. Mm-hmm. You know who we got on? You know who's going to be our guest?
Cody Barton.
Cody Barton!
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
I know.
Good deal.
I'm going to have to talk to you afterwards what I should ask him.
What, 7 o'clock, right? 7 to 9.
7 to 9. Yeah. The Mariners aren't playing today, right? So yeah, we'll be on 7 to 9.
Yeah.
So, look at you. See, Paul's like us in that you sort of plan your day around the Mariners.
Yeah.
Like, wait, so they're on at this time. I got to get this done before then. I got to get here before then. That's and when's the last time we were like that with this team? I mean, it's an amazing thing to be here week of game one for the Seattle Seahawks. Couldn't be more excited about football season every year, but here you are. Mariners are in the thick of it, and we're living and dying with every game. And there's just a precious few left.
It really is interesting that, you know, there's so many pitches, and, you know, obviously there's 9 innings for the most part. I guess if you have a doubleheader, it could be 7. But that every pitch now, you know, you get mad at umpires and they miss one by a fraction. And but by the way, Bob, it's been 20 years since we've been like this with the Mariners. So it's been a long wait, and it is fun. Anyway, I've talked about it. I mean, I love this team. I love J.P. Crawford. I just think he is
cool.
A leader amongst leaders. He's just something special about him. Unbelievable shortstop and clutch hitting. I like every one of these kids, and they are, but for the most part, they're all kids. So I'm emotionally drained, and we're still got, 22 games to go?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty close to it. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough next 25, 30 days here.
Yeah, last Friday night, we're over there watching the extra inning game with the Diamondbacks.
He let you be part of the crew?
Yeah, no, I couldn't be part of his texting crew, but Paul's like, excuse me a minute, Dave, I have to text my guys. But he did. But he did talk to me during the game. But no, I mean, it was so much fun. And I mean, you know, it just hasn't been like that for a long time. And it just, because the games actually matter. So, yeah, it's fun. You know, there's going to be kind of a little bit of a withdrawal there when the season's over.
Well, hopefully it extends well into October. That would be fun. But we do have this other team, the Seahawks, that can take up most of our at least free time during the week and stuff. And it's an exciting time. We talked last week. I think this is the best time. College football, did you see the ratings on college football? Just because of people back in the stand. People need it, man. Mm. There's just so many weird things from this COVID thing that you're not used to. You know, you don't know how to judge it. But I know how much better I felt looking at games with full fans and excitement.
Oh, yeah.
And it was such a fun weekend, even though the Pac-12, the bottom feeders were horrible.
Well,
the top feeders are pretty good. But
we won't dwell on what happened there. That's just painful for a lot of people. But let me ask you about the Seahawks as it pertains to Duane Brown. We were playing some cuts from him earlier, and it's hard not to listen to him, Paul, and just go, what a thoughtful, mature guy. And he talked about, he said flat out, yeah, I didn't get exactly what I wanted, but I'm happy. And, you know, talked about how he wasn't going to miss a game and how he felt a sense of obligation to Russell. And then at the same time, you know, while praising Russell for standing up for him and, hey, he didn't have to do that. That's, you know, he's a legacy here, this whole thing. They asked him about the comments Russell made in the offseason. And he said, oh, yeah, yeah, we had a talk. Like, you could hear that wasn't a media creation, that there could be, you know, maybe the O-lineman took offense to that. He without saying that, he said, oh, yeah, yeah, we had a talk. And it was a good talk, you know, and they're in a great place. But it just, I'm curious if you had a chance to hear any of what he said, what your reaction was.
Yeah, the two things. One, I'll start with the last one is, I don't think Russell was talking about him, but yeah. You know, in the off season, he was talking probably overall. And look, Duane he's a mature man he thinks before he talks. You know, I mean, he's, you know, social issues, all those things. You know, he's very aware. I like, you know, and by the way, Russell did need to do that. I mean, as far as, you know, going to bat for him, I mean, that's your left tackle. That's your person that's probably most important to you on that team, other than maybe some of the wide receivers. But look, in this day and age, you have to take business and as a player and think about the business side. There's, I want more, but there's not always more money to be had there. And, you know, that doesn't mean I have to be, I got the greatest deal. I got a good deal. You know, I'm content and I'm happy because I was nervous about that one. You know, that's one, the guy that we have to have. And for a lot of reasons, not just his own play, but Damian Lewis sitting next to him is only in his second year. I mean, they're supposed to be working together and they haven't had a chance to work together. So really important to get him back on the field. And I know everybody feels better in that building and probably no more than Russell Wilson.
One thing that I thought was kind of cool, Paul, was that, you know, hearing Duane say that, like, oh, yeah, like Bob said, we definitely had a talk, but that kind of made me feel good that nothing's changed, because I instantly went and thought, Paul, what if Dave Craig in the, you know, Seattle PI at the time had said, yeah, I'm tired of getting hit. Can you imagine what guys like Brian Millard and Edwin Bailey, and I mean, that would have, you know, there's just a line you don't cross there no matter what time. That it's just good to know that things still, you know, they remain the same, just because offensive line, I mean, that's a tight-knit group, and that's one of those positions like Ron Mattis where you take care of those guys at all costs if you're a quarterback, no matter what era.
Yeah, and they usually, quarterbacks and offensive linemen usually stick together. And then again, that's what, you know, playing some old news here, but that's what was, you know, so out of character when Russell Wilson brought it up. And I didn't think it was that big a deal at the time, but yeah, every offensive lineman with social media today, they were on top of that one. And there's no better person to talk to him than Duane Brown. You know, it was like, what do you mean by that? And yeah, they probably had a good conversation. You know, here's what I'm looking at, short term, long term. Here's what that really means. And maybe Russell even said, that means me too. You know, I got to get better. I got to get rid of the ball quicker. I got to make better decisions. And, you know, those usually, like in any relationship, communication is always good when it's a good communication.
Hey, Paul, we had Brady on yesterday, and I asked him this. I'm curious just to get your take on it. As we sit right now, a few days away from game one, and the roster is what it is currently, what stands out to you in terms of who they kept and maybe who they let go? Is there anything you're looking at now that you're like, okay, this is the 53. Boy, I'm surprised this guy's here. Or, boy, I'm surprised they didn't hang on to this guy. Anybody stand out either way?
I think I had Kimdichie was the one guy that I was surprised at, just because we're at three tackles. Al Woods is a guy that traditionally doesn't play more than 50%. I don't know if he's ever played 50% of the snaps, because he's more of a first, second down, you know, mixed down player. So that one surprised me. And again, I don't think it's done. We mentioned that the practice squad's so big, and Kimdichie is on our practice squad. I could see him easily being activated, depending on how they do some things leading up to game time. You know, corner, I was surprised, but I didn't know what their thinking was. I mean, you know, obviously losing Witherspoon caught me off guard. I had just done a piece on him. I liked him. I thought he was athletic. But, you know, there were some things that came, you know, from behind the scenes on that. It was one, he was making, you know, quite a bit of money to be a backup, because it looked like he was going to be a backup. And, you know, he may not have been the best tackler guy that they liked. They, you know, they want guys to be aggressive and be solid tacklers. And maybe they found out he wasn't one of those guys. So I was a little surprised there. You know, other than that, I, you know, linebacker, you know, maybe not really adding to that, but I think they really believe that they've got these hybrid pieces that they can do. And, you know, you're going to see a bunch of different packages defensively. I like this roster, though, Bob. I guess to get to it, I like this roster. There's just a lot of question marks of guys who are very good athletes that are young, can run. They check the box. They got to go and get it done. And we're going to find out here in a few days. But I like this roster. I really think we're going to be a very good football team. I think we're pretty deep and can withstand some injuries. You know, you can't have the major ones, you know, at quarterback and some other positions. But no, I'm very comfortable with this roster going into the season.
Yeah, you're talking about the corners being physical, and that, bless Austin. He's definitely physical. That's the one thing that you can see that they're going to get from him. What about Bobby Wagner? 100% of the snaps in every game he played in, and the only snaps that he missed were in the fourth quarter of the Jets game, because they were ahead by 30 or 40 points. Do you think they manage him a little bit differently this year? Do you think maybe they will rest him a little bit more, or do you think they're going to have a hard time getting him off the field? What do you see for Bobby this year?
Well, and I've brought that up a few times, Dave. You and I have had this conversation. I just don't think you can play 100% of the snaps when you start getting into your 30s. It's particularly a position that, you know, is so physically demanding. I think a lot of it is going to depend on his play. You know, I mean, if he's productive, if he can play every snap, so be it. I listened to, or at least it was tweeted out, part of his press conference yesterday, and he said at the very beginning, he said, this year before I think he meant answer your questions this week, I'm going to talk about something I want to talk about, company, business, youth, business. And it concerned me. And the reason why it concerned me, and bear with me on this, is he didn't talk about football. And he talked about some other priorities that are important to him in his life today, which, again, I think that's awesome. But I'll never forget talking with a guy a long time, it was probably 20 years ago, and he was a golf psychologist or psychiatrist, and he was talking about Greg Norman. And Greg Norman was the number one golfer at the time. This probably goes more than 20 years ago now, but it's probably 25 years ago. And they asked Greg Norman, said, what are you most concerned about? And he said that business, he goes, I'm having a business meeting right now. I'm having this conversation. And he pointed out, I guess it must have been in a clubhouse, he pointed out someone who was under the lights hitting golf balls, and it was Tiger Woods. He goes, that's what I'm concerned at. Do I have enough time with all the other things I have going on in my life? You know, can I still make golf the number one priority? And football's the same way. These guys make so much money. And my concern is, you know, I think he will be, you know, football will be his number one priority. He's going to put everything into it. But it has to be your number one priority. It can't be a close second to anything when you're competing at that level. And so, you know, questions, concerns, and, you know, he's a great player. I think he'll continue to be. But that one caught my attention.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, really quick. Somebody was just saying this, and I can't remember who it was, but, you know, when people ask me, like, what are you going to do? Now, it was painful, the 2 years that I was trying to get back in the league, and that I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life once I knew it was over. But I kind of feel like that's the only way you can be. I never thought about what I was going to do afterwards. And I think from a lot of ex-players, you'll hear some people say, no, there's nothing wrong with planning your retirement and starting a business and doing all that. And then there are other people, and I felt this way, like I was going to just think about football 100% of the time, no matter what, you know. And look, I'm not even speculating as to whether or not this is going to be a distraction or anything for Bobby Wagner.
Right.
But and same with you. I was in that camp that I'll stop thinking about football when my body gives out and it's over. But to me, that was just my creed. And I saw guys that I thought were thinking about other things, and that they actually, their career ended earlier because of it.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a different era, Dave. You know, they make so much money. You know, they have opportunities with, you know, private investments and things that we never had the opportunity of. And so, you know, our time, it really was, while we may have been thinking about retirement or forced retirement, very few of us went out on our own, right? I mean, injuries or you're not good enough anymore. Today, they can actually plan it a little better. I mean, Bobby doesn't need to work anymore. You know, he is retired financially. He doesn't need money to you know, move with his lifestyle there. But so with that, that's all we had back then, Dave, right? It was football 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We didn't have social media. We had some video games.
Right.
But you had football. I mean, what did you do at night? Oh, I'm watching tape.
Yeah.
You know, that's all we had to do back then. Today, they're pulled from social media to all the other social issues to business. I think it's tougher to manage. But when I hear people, it's like anybody who's about to retire, when somebody's really said, I'm going to retire, and they stay for another year, they're going down the retirement side. You know, that they're thinking about retirement. So I think, you know, it's not a bad thing, but I mean, I'm not even making this negative. I just have concerns that, boy, I hope that it's still number one on his priority list. I brought this up many times too about, you know, could people in my era play in today's era? And I would say absolutely. As a matter of fact, easier, you know, because the athletes get transferred. You know, you would be as good an athlete. You would have all the supplements. I don't know if this era could play in our era, Dave, because it's so physical. You have to think football 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You had 2-3 a days. You came across the middle, you got smacked in the mouth. And by the way, you get brought up that way through high school, through college, who finally get to the NFL. That's the expectations. It's a brutal game. It's a physical game now, but it's an athlete game. So that's my little pushback on people that when they say, could you have played in this era? I said, absolutely. I don't know if they could have played in my era because, you know, it's a street fight, and these guys aren't used to street fights anymore.
Is that not almost word for word what I thought he would say?
When
we were talking during the break.
My pushback, Paul, would be, I would say this, they work a lot harder than we do. To support Paul's argument, Paul, I would take maybe a month off, 3 weeks. These guys take 2 days off. Russell Wilson has like an entire barn that is his own gym. These guys have, I mean, I think they're putting a lot more time in the off season, and they're, you know, there's just better technology and things like that. The toughness part, though, to your point, yeah, I don't know about that part. That, you know, we hit all the time. So, but I feel like, yeah, if we got all of the training stuff and everything that they had and had the same standards where you don't take off more than a week, yeah, maybe you could be. But I look at guys like I think my best 40 that I ever ran was in the Stanford gym, you know, so that's not exactly on grass. It was a fast track. I ran like a 4.56. Devin White runs a 4.35. I mean, nobody, receivers weren't even running that then. So I just think that comes from a lot of training and things like that. I don't think they're genetically better. I just think that it's from all the training.
that supplements all of those things. Look, they're also being paid an enormous amount of money. Here's my other one. You still got to go do the work. You know, some people will say to Russell, well, look, he has people that he can hire to train him, and look at his setup. It's so easy. I go, he's still got to get up. He's still got to go do the work. I don't care. You know, that to me is really impressive. But I just look at it more from speed's relative, right? I mean, it changes over time. You go back 30 years ago, what was the Olympic 100-meter champion versus today?
Yeah.
You know, it just that evolves over time. But there's a toughness part that's just different. And I know everybody out there says, oh, God, there's Paul. He's that old school, bringing back that old stuff. But I get it so much. Do you think that – I mean, these guys are such great athletes. So I just kind of spin it back and say, well, tell you what, let's go in a ring and let's see who comes out. Because that's what football used to be back then.
Yeah.
It was a blood – I mean, look, I had blood all over my jerseys every game. There's no blood anymore, Dave.
Nobody bleeds anymore.
Pull them off the field now if there's anybody bleeding.
You know what? Make the NFL bloody again, says Paul Moyer. I've been saying make it violent again. But no, I'm with you on the toughness part of it. And I do think that, I do think that we would have definitely benefited if we had all the technology and everything to train. I'll tell you one thing, Paul. You know this about me still. Diet? You and I had some pretty nice burgers the other night. I mean, when I was, you know, I remember having Paula, who would come over to our house.
Yeah, Paula cooked for us.
Yep, I got her from you, and she would clean the house and make a really nice meal. Other than that, I was eating macaroni and cheese and takeout hamburgers and maybe a beer or two in there. And you see these guys like Tom Brady.
It's changed.
Doesn't have a single beer during the entire season.
Doesn't have a carb during the season.
Yeah, so that would have helped us, Paul.
I love that.
That would have helped
us. I remember I know we're short on time, but I remember with Chuck Knox, when I came in, the best shape I've ever been in my life. I came in at 218 pounds, fastest I've ever been. Body fat was like 6-7%. I was in the greatest shape of my life. And he said, you need to lose 10 pounds. And I'm like, how? And I remember eating pasta, just starving myself, and I couldn't lose weight. And my body fat went up. I slowed down. So, yes, Dave, the point is we had no idea about nutrition. They didn't feed us back then. They gave me gum when I would get a blood sugar drop and say, well, here, eat this, you know, during practice.
Chew some gum.
It's come a long way.
Yeah. Now they have these like shakes that they bring each player with a name on it.
That's very specific to what they want in it.
It's it has vitamin D because you're low in this. Yeah.
Got some kale. This is chocolate flavor. This has got berries. It's a science.
We could have had those milkshakes after practice.
We'd still be playing.
That's right.
Bigger, stronger, faster. Yeah.
I believe it.
Yes.
Paul, we appreciate it as always. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to talking about game one when we talk to you next week.
I look forward. Enjoy your birthday night.
Thank you. I appreciate that, buddy. There you go. There's Paul Moyer with us every week. Always a fun conversation with him. Coming up, it's shaping up to be a Blue Jays and Mariners kind of postseason. We'll get into the wild card chaos coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Paul Moyer for joining us on the program. If you guys missed that conversation, it's available on the podcast page for you. Just head to 710sports.com, click that podcast tab, and scroll down to our picture. Click on that. Be right there waiting for you after the show.
People are getting bigger.
They are. We get a lot of people. And you guys can text in at any point during the show, whenever you want. 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. They were weighing in on his idea that he could compete against today's athlete. You know, if he were of age today, he would do well because of what you guys did. And it was more of a grind, and it was two-a-days, and you were hitting all the time. And you and I were talking about it during the break, just the evolution of the human race. You know, people are just bigger now than they were then. People are faster. You were talking about your 40 time back then at the time was considered really fast for a linebacker. Now you're talking about Devin White and guys his size running even faster. And we can look at basketball. I was talking about Bill Russell, one of the most dominant players in the history of the game, was 6'9". you know, if he were thrown in there against Shaq in his prime, you think Shaq's not going to be able to back him down under the hoop and do what he wants? I mean, it's just, it's a natural, same with boxing. We talked about that. Rocky Marciano, under 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Now you got people like Tyson Fury, 6'9", 265 pounds. The Klitschko brothers, 6'7". I mean, it's just, they're different or different.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, look, I think if you're Bill Russell, though, and you know that you're playing against guys like Shaq, then you're getting lower. Your technique has to get better.
Right.
You are, you know, you're adapting to that. So I think, you know, and the thing is, like, let's say I run at Stanford, I run a 4.55 40, and it's the best out of any linebacker in the league. I'm not going to try to run a 4.3, and I'm not going to go and train with somebody to try to get down to that because I'm already gotten that. So then somebody comes eclipse, and then somebody from the next generation eclipses that, and now all of a sudden you got somebody running a 4.3. So, I mean, there's that. I don't think that, you know, genetics have developed over the last 35 years in the human body, the DNA and everything, that, you know, but I do think that there are, you know, techniques and there are supplements and there are, you know, all this different kind of training that you can do that is adding to it. But mostly, like I said, you know, if the best bench press in the NFL is 400 and you have it, you're not going to say, man, I got to get to 500. Because now we see like guys like Damian Lewis are benching like 530 pounds. It's ridiculous.
Isn't that as much as a car? Isn't that what Danny was saying?
Danny was a 500-pound car. I'm like, what kind of car do you drive, Danny?
The 500-pound car. It'll be blown over in a gust of wind, but yeah.
Danny gets in the car and increases the weight of the car by about 20%. So no, I mean, that was that. That's just kind of it's a different standard and everything. I think Paul was talking about their toughness.
Yeah,
you know,
and he's accurate in that. And we talked about it before we even had him on because we knew we were going to bring this up. And just talking about what you guys did was completely different than what they're doing now. And that is, you know, the hitting and maybe they're working smarter. You guys worked hard. You always hear work smarter, not harder.
Yeah,
maybe that's what they're doing now. You know, back then you guys were beating the daylights out of each other twice a day out there in the scorching heat, and you didn't have all the supplements, you didn't have all the specialized training and the science in place that they have now, where they're monitoring everything. They monitor every part of your body and how you're recovering and what your muscles are doing, and are you hydrated? They got all these special mechanisms to monitor every aspect of your being, and learning. Okay, if we do this, we're going to get more out of this player. If we go about it this way. So it's just about learning more and advancing more in science and figuring out a better way of doing things.
Well, and I appreciate the 2-5-3. Humans are evolving and everything, but science says, please don't say what science says anymore. Anybody ever, please. Because everybody's quoting it as if it's one thing and it's settled. Science. Well, it's your version of the science. That word has become, anyway. I don't know if it's also like there's nutrition, there's things like that. I can't argue though that people are getting bigger. You know, are we going to continue so they're like in 25, 30 years, are there going to be like
50 years from now, everybody's walking around
8 feet tall?
That guy's 7'9", 390 pounds. He's lean. It's just people evolve. They find new ways of getting into a condition that you couldn't back then. And you know, you talk about your diet back then. You guys were eating burgers and a couple of beers here and there. And then we talk about Tom Brady and his science, if you will, and how he's approached his fitness and probably doesn't touch a carb during the season. And he looks as young as he ever has and is playing as well as he ever has.
Yeah. This guy's saying that the drummer for the Rolling Stones was a mediocre linebacker.
What?
Who's the drummer for?
Charlie Watts.
Oh.
He died.
I'm thinking of the... Who's Bill Wyman?
He was the bass player.
Oh, okay. The bass player.
Yeah. He's no longer in the band, but he's still amongst the living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said Bill Wyman was a mediocre linebacker. So let's get back to our topic here. Okay. You know who got it right, though? Mike Shanahan. I thought he had the perfect blend of we would go through the drills where you needed to hit and get your technique down, and the running game hit. And then we'd go over and take our pads off for the second half of practice. So you got some hitting in, and that was only twice a week. got some hitting in.
So he was progressive back then.
Yeah, he was like one of the first. And I thought it was brilliant. I mean, even at the time, I was like, we're doing 7-on-7. We're not doing live tackling. Why do we have shoulder pads on?
Yeah.
You know, because then you take those off, and then it makes it less physical. And, yeah, I thought he did that right.
As far as the Mariners go, it's so interesting. We were talking about it. 22 games left to play, Dave. 22 left to play, and right now they're 2.5 games back. The Blue Jays have jumped in front of them. The Blue Jays are a game behind the Blue Jays, who are 1.5 games back at this point. So you got Boston and New York occupying the top two wild card spots. The Blue Jays, who are 1.5 back of New York, and then Seattle 2.5 back. Who do you? It's, you know, we were talking yesterday. I'm going, oh, you got to pull for the Yankees because they're the team that's, you know, in front. They occupy one of the spots, and the Blue Jays had jumped in front of you. Now I'm not sure which one. The Yankees, after what did they win? 13 in a row, something like that. They've lost 5 in a row. They're scuffling. Whereas the Blue Jays have won 7 in a row, and they've got the murderer's row. They've got a plus 143 run differential.
Wow, and they've won 10 of their last 11 games.
Yeah, they are rolling. So now maybe I'm reversing course and you got to pull for the Blue Jays when they're playing the Yankees. You're rooting for the Yankees to come back down to earth because it feels like they are. They've lost 8 of 10. They've lost 5 in a row. Maybe they're more primed for that fall. And the Blue Jays, that offense is just ridiculous, and they seem to be clicking at the right time.
Well, and the Blue Jays, they're getting ready. They got one game against New York, but then after that they have 4 against Baltimore, who's pretty dreadful. Although
I think they're the worst team in baseball, aren't they?
Yeah, they've won 4 of the last 5 games, though.
Baltimore has?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, maybe
45-93.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe they're able to, like with Kansas City, since the All-Star break, and we thought that would be one of those easy ones coming in there. But maybe the Orioles will give the Blue Jays a little bit of trouble there. But just offensively, they're so dominant.
Yeah, it's and listen, you got a 3-game series coming up with the Red Sox, and you know the Red Sox have an interesting schedule because they got the White Sox right before the Mariners series. So that's the White Sox are a very good team. They've got the Orioles after the Mariners, and then the Mets and the Yankees. Yankees will be going up against Toronto today, as you said. Then they've got the Mets, Orioles, Cleveland, and Rangers. And then Boston for 3. So just trying to figure out who's going to have the toughest schedule. Right now the Yankees look very vulnerable for whatever reason. I haven't paid attention to injuries or what's truly going on with them. But, man, losing at the clip that they've been losing recently, I guess you've got to pull for the Blue Jays, right?
All right, well, I'd rather pull for the Blue Jays than the Yankees.
Yeah, that's easier.
Yeah.
Definitely easier. All right, it's settled. All right, coming up, why are the Seahawks looking at old Eagles games to prepare for this Colts team? Tell you about that next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, so stay tuned for that conversation. And don't forget, Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday, 6 to 10 a.m., including the Matt Hasselbeck Show, Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m., so tune into that as well. Meanwhile, got the Colts sitting in front of us with what looks like Carson Wentz. It looked initially, 5 to 12 weeks he was going to be out.
That's right.
5 to 12 or somewhere in between.
He's had some things with the COVIDs as
with
well.
There's lots of things. Yeah, it's just it's an interesting time frame, but it looks like he's going to be there. And he's a guy, as we talked about, as much as you kind of make fun of Wentz and, you know, he's had a hard time staying healthy. Now he's on a new team. He's a guy who was a front runner for the MVP award 1 year before he got hurt. He can be very good. He's not a bum. He's not a Goff. He's not somebody you look at and go, ugh, I don't worry about that guy. Yeah, I worry about Wentz when he's not hurt. We'll see what he looks like in this offense. We've never seen him with the Colts and, you know, what he's got to work with there. But Pete Carroll says he feels like with Wentz and Reich out there that's a dangerous group.
I think the thing we're looking at is the relationship that Frank and Carson had when they were together. And you know, that world-class season they put together – was obvious. And so I'm sure that's how they're looking towards the future. And that's how I'm looking towards it, you know, because I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be that way, you know. And they've got an offensive line. They've got nice, terrific running backs, nice receiver crew. Tight ends can play and do special stuff. He's got everything he needs, you know. And so, and he's got a coach that obviously communicates great with him. So.
Yeah, they're trying to sort of recapture that magnetism between Reich when he was the offensive coordinator in Philly. Doug Peterson was the head coach, but this is 2017. He was 11-2 that year, and that was his second year in the league. 33 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. So
it's pretty darn good.
It's pretty darn good. I guess I would just say it just doesn't strike fear. Like, you know, I mean, look, it depends on if the Seahawks, and to me, it's all about the Seahawks in this game. Is this a good team? Yeah, they're a good team. They were 11-5 last year. They made the playoffs. They're transitioning away from Phillip Rivers, though. And, you know, and we'll see with the injuries and things. Like, there's no T.Y. Hilton. You know, but they have some good players like DeForest Buckner, and Darius Leonard is a really good linebacker.
Right.
To me, this is about the Seahawk defense. I mean, I think the offense can score points, you know, a score enough to win, but it's about the Seahawk defense and how they play. Because there were lots of times where you would say, oh, yeah, Dallas beat them on that play, or New England really beat them on that play. But then you look, go back and look, like, what was the defense doing? And dropping coverage, not playing together, two guys in one zone, you know, guy not taking a block on. I mean, there was all kinds of things like that. I just, you know, I don't know why that start that they had defensively still kind of worries me a little bit.
It was haunting, Dave.
Okay, that's all right. Yeah, I was going to say a dramatic word like that, Bob.
It was. They were on a historically bad pace. They were not just history of the organization, history of the league bad. That's, I mean, especially under Pete Carroll, you're going, what is happening here?
Well, and especially pass defense. So I think it was week 8 or week 9, they were on a pace to give up more passing yards than they did in 2013 and 2014.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so I get having, you know, you're sort of shell-shocked. Like, what did we just watch? What the heck was that? And you could... Listen, if you want to go on the negative side, you say, yeah, they turned things around in the second half of the season, but who did they play? Which quarterbacks did they face? You know, did that have something to do with it? Maybe it did. Maybe they certainly figured some things out, but was it all about, hey, we returned to form and we know we're better than that? Or was it, hey, we're going up against some weaker opposition, some quarterbacks that aren't quite as threatening or quite as able to take advantage of some of the mistakes we're making?
Yeah, well, and that's why when we came in after the playoff game and most people were – you know, not happy with the offense, which shouldn't have been. I mean, things were falling apart. Obviously, Russell knew it, but I'm like, man, you just got beat by a team with a rookie running back who was good, but also you had a guy who had a surgically repaired thumb.
Who couldn't really throw the ball. Even the completions, the ball didn't look that good, and
yeah,
he gutted it out. I mean, give him credit. Dude was tough and got out there and did it.
Did you? There was a quote, I don't know if that was something that maybe, I think it was over at Q13 where Gerald Everett was being interviewed by Kurt Menefee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, well, I played with some quarterbacks that can't even throw the ball. And I was like, and we didn't ask him to clarify who it was. But, yeah, I mean.
Do you assume it was probably Goff?
Yeah,
what do you think?
I did, certainly. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he was talking about something in college. I don't know, but, yeah, I felt like that was more on the defense than anything. So I think it's going to be about the standard to which these guys play. And, you know, seeing these guys all play together after some preseason games and getting Marquise Blair involved and having the, you know, the whole crew out there with all the starters, guys like Carlos Dunlap that we talked to today. And they, by the way, his sack total for the year, what he wants, his goal was 13. And I said, you know, Jamal Adams said 12.
12 and a half.
Did he say 12 and a half?
Yes.
And I was like, so did you just up him? And he's like, oh, is that what he said? Well, yeah, I want more than him.
Yeah, he said 12 and a half and 5 picks.
Right. Well, and I said this on the huddle too. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get the 5 picks. I would almost
probably more realistic than, even though he had 9.5 sacks, is he Is he going to get that? That's a big number for a defensive back, for a safety. So, the picks seem like there'd be more opportunity if he's able to hang on to the ball.
Well, and I think everybody's going to say, whoa, he's terrible in coverage. It's funny how, you get people will text in just these general comments about, well, he hasn't been used that way. So, I guess he did drop a couple of balls.
Yeah. Yeah. He had opportunities that went by the wayside. Was it injury? Was it he doesn't have great hands? Yeah. Maybe it's both.
I wonder what he did in the offseason to work on those hands to get five picks.
I don't know. He's confident, though. He's confident. All right. Coming up, we'll talk some more football with a professor. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, now is the time to text those in. 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.